I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Many of you are probably still doing some holiday shopping, and actually this hour will be applicable if you're holiday shopping or buying a gift for anybody at any time of year. An article in the Wall Street Journal caught our attention. 5 ways to give better gifts backed by science. Buying gifts, the article goes on to say, is often anxiety-provoking, and psychologists who have studied gift-giving have identified why some gifts elicit joy and other gifts polite smiles. We have 2 guests with us this hour, and I'm sure that we'll have many phone calls because I'm interested in hearing from you about the best gift that you ever gave and why you figure that it was the better gift and what kind of thought went into it. But we're actually classifying good gifts as those where the recipient of the gift is just pretty much overjoyed by whatever it happens to be. Our guests are Donna Wexler Linden, a journalist and author. Her piece appeared in the Wall Street Journal. She was formerly a senior editor at Forbes magazine and is the author of the book Preemies, The Essential Guide for Parents of Premature Babies, which she wrote along with her sister. She is the mother of premature twins. And we thank you, Donna, for having written that article so we can do a talk show about it. Thank you very much.
Very glad to be here, Kathleen. Thank
nice you. To have you with us. Lisa Kavanaugh is also here, an assistant professor of marketing at the USC Marshall School of Business, an expert in consumer psychology who studies how emotions and social relationships influence consumption. And she's done a very interesting study on the gift of donation to a charity, a gift that is a meaningful gift, and how those are received by the recipient. It depends on who that person is. It's an interesting study, and we thank you, Lisa, very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, you know, it is something. I have friends, and I'm reaching the point because I've done so little shopping. I've just had all these other things going on where you can get a little bit anxious. People get anxious about giving gifts, don't they? Getting the whole thing done and making sure they get a gift that's good. It makes people nervous.
Yes, it really does. And it, by the way, we spend a lot of money on gifts. The average person, I didn't put this in my story, but the average person spends about $500 on about 14 gifts at this time of year.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of money to buy bad gifts. You better make them good.
That's right. So you went through literature and you found psychologists and other researchers who really do a study, Donna, of gift giving.
Yes. And the reason that we were interested in it at the Wall Street Journal is that some of the findings were very surprising. They were contrary to conventional wisdom.
Yes, absolutely very surprising. Absolutely, that the things that you thought would be, it's counterintuitive almost, starting with you should give something that reflects who you are. I've always done exactly the opposite.
Yes, we're always told to do the opposite. Think about the person you're giving to, what they're interested in and what their values are, and buy them something they can use or, you know, that reflects their interests. And this study looked at how close givers and receivers felt to each other. They were asked to report on a scale how close they felt to each other before and after exchanging gifts. And there are quite a few experiments, and they all came out the same. For example, in one case, there were 122 university students. They were asked to give an iTunes song, and some of them were asked to choose one that reflects your true self, and the other group was asked to give a song that reflects your knowledge of the recipient. And in the cases of all these experiments, the feelings of closeness afterwards were highest when the gift reflected the giver, not the recipient.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that counterintuitive, Lisa?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that makes this area of gift giving so rich and why articles like Donna's are so important, because there is a lot of complexity and a lot of factors that go into whether or not a recipient will actually appreciate that gift that's given.
Right. So you say in your article, Donna, that somebody gave her brother a gift card to one of her favorite restaurants, French restaurants. Now, this is a guy who eats, you know, maybe at diners, goes out for a good breakfast, and he eats at casual places. And so she recommended it, and he was very excited and went there and thought of her.
Yes. By the way, this was the researcher herself
Oh my.
Who completely changed her gift-giving strategy after doing the research, as any of us would. And she was tempted to give him something that just was the kind of thing that he would normally do, one of the diners or chains that he usually went to, but decided not to. And I spoke to him, and he really was excited. He was planning to have her favorite dish when he was there and talked about how he would be thinking of her while he did it.
Oh. Do you want to chime in on that, Lisa?
Well, I think the thing that's interesting to note, and I'm actually coming up with additional study ideas while we're talking here, is thinking about that research in terms of, if you think about a song or you think about a meal, those are both interesting experiences, but they're somewhat fleeting, right? They're a one-shot deal. You could listen to the song over and over again, but it's not necessarily a tangible item.
Right.
So I think that to the extent that someone gives you a pair of shoes that reflects themselves rather than your own taste may not necessarily lead to that same level of closeness or those same changes in perceived closeness. I think there's some interesting moderators or other factors that go into whether or not those gifts that reflect the self versus reflect the recipient may be more or less appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about men and women. I must tell you that this is just my own observation, but it's seconded by so many people I know, that women are so much easier to buy for than men. That there, we have men in our lives where you just think, I can't figure out what to get this person. Whereas with female members of your family, it's just the possibilities are endless. Is that way off the mark, or is there some truth in that?
Yes, right. The study that I included that pertains to this was a little bit sad to me. The researchers looked at couples' reactions. They looked at some couples who were fairly new acquaintances, male-female pairs in all cases, some who were new acquaintances, and some who were actually in dating relationships and romantic relationships. And what they found, they asked the recipient whether, after a gift was given, whether they were pleased or disappointed by the gift. In the cases when it was a woman who was disappointed, it did not affect how similar she felt to the man whom she was dating or, you know, beginning to date or already dating. In the case of the men who were disappointed, they reported feeling significantly less similar to the woman after they got a disappointing gift. And then the reduction in what they perceived as their similarity affected their evaluation of whether the relationship had a future.
Oh, my gosh. So you could break up over a bad gift? That's amazing. Is this true even if the woman was given a vacuum cleaner?
You know, interestingly, again, I didn't get into this too much, but we could, people can look at the story and see the links. There were some cases in which women even preferred the relationship, even thought more highly of the man and the relationship afterwards after receiving a bad gift from her point of view. And the researchers thought that with women, they had a slightly more community-oriented or relationship-oriented value and were actually overcoming. They were sort of stretching to still think highly of the person despite the fact that they'd received a disappointing gift.
Amazing. Lisa, are men harder to buy for?
I think it's one of those, it depends. You know, I think one of the things that's interesting about the findings that that we were just discussing is if you think about why that might have occurred, and then I promise to go back to your question.
All right, that's okay.
But if you almost think about to what extent do you think men and women expect their partner to get it right?
Yes.
And to what extent do you think how many women probably don't think the men in their lives are going to get it right? So it's almost expectation disconfirmation, where the men are more accustomed to women being good at perspective taking and women oftentimes accommodating their needs. And all of a sudden, if they give a bad gift, it's like, what happened? I'm expecting her to read my mind. She does in so many other ways. And perhaps women who are more accustomed to men who aren't able to read their minds or know their preferences explicitly are somehow less disappointed. There's less room to fall in some of those cases. And I wonder if that might have had something to do with some of those differences in how gender influenced the kind of those perceptions of closeness after a gift exchange. Are men really more difficult to buy for? I think to the extent that they may not always be as verbal, and they may be less likely to use tools like Pinterest and show what their favorite things are, or you know, how to maintain lists that give a really great cue or tool that gift givers could possibly use to really hone in on an appreciated gift that will give great joy to that recipient, then yes. But I think to the extent that any gift giver, regardless of gender, you know, is working to kind of perspective take or really try to think about what that recipient would appreciate by looking at the world through that recipient's eyes rather than their own, they're, you know, on a much better path to finding a well-appreciated gift.
Mm. You say in the article, Donna, that the researchers have said to you, when choosing for men, choose a gift that builds on areas of similarity. Can you give us examples?
Yes, the researcher again herself said that she, as a result of her findings, she changed her own strategy, and she said that she and her husband both love to bike, and she used to get him, I guess, things he didn't like at all. I can't remember what they were, but now she says, I stick to biking gifts. You know, that's what we both like to do, and her last gift for him was, she described, a bright orange mountain bike, which he really loved. She said, if you and your romantic partner or your friend both like skiing, go for the skiing-related gift.
Hmm. How do you know when you've given a really good gift, Lisa? Do you expect tears? Do you expect this smile that beats all other smiles, or what?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is if you're good at reading body language, and I think that's actually one of the interesting things that happens now. Is that we, you know, there's a lot of great work on how much of our communication is nonverbal. You know, we can smile, but not really be happy on the inside. We've all probably been in situations where we've had to kind of do some emotion work of feign appreciation, either at a shower or a party where there's, you know, in a public display where you need to kind of maintain, some sense of people seeing you the way you want to be seen. But I think that what you really can tell is that actually if you are able to give a gift in person, reading that body language, not just looking at a smile for the kind of seeing the pearly whites, but actually a Duchenne smile, which is you'll see engagement of the eyes, the kind of those lines, which those of us who those are, you know, not so affectionately referred to as crow's feet or laugh lines.
Right.
When someone's smiling authentically rather than a fake smile, you'll see those muscles around the eyes engage. You'll see the eyes squint slightly, and you'll know whether it's a real smile and it's authentic, whether and likely to be a reflective of greater appreciation of that gift rather than someone trying to make you feel good about having given them something.
Ooh, everybody's going to be looking really closely now.
Yeah, facial expressions for sure.
Right.
And trying to make sure our eyes move when
Well, the good thing about that is it's very difficult. You can't, it's nearly impossible to fake those type of authentic smiles because it's an involuntary response that occurs, kind of this co-current engagement of different muscles around the face and the smile all at the same time.
Oh, my goodness, Lisa. How many of us really do enjoy giving, and we like it? You cite this really interesting study, Donna, where toddlers exhibited greater happiness when they gave treats to others. These are toddlers.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, you would have thought that they wanted to get the treats themselves.
That's right. This was the most heartwarming thing. Psychologists looked at, in this case, they did a bunch of experiments, but in this case it was 20 toddlers, and they analyzed their facial expressions, but the people who were analyzing the expressions did not know which kids were giving and which kids were receiving. And so some toddlers were given various treats, and others were given treats or asked to give some of theirs to other toddlers. And they showed significantly more happiness when they were giving than receiving. And most recently, some of the same researchers did very similar experiments in a very isolated village in the South Pacific, where it's a pretty impoverished village. There's no electricity. There's no running water. There are not a lot of essentials even. And in that case, exactly the same result came back, that even there, when children have so little, they would prefer to give than to receive.
Mm. How do you explain that, Lisa? It is heartwarming.
It is. I think it goes back to, you know, if you think about your ability to think of when you were a child or you were that small and as a toddler, some of us probably have better memories than others of that early time in life. But if you think about the small children in your life that you know, the ability to kind of elicit a reaction or a response, or to feel like you have agency to kind of make something happen, in this case, create a response on the part of another person, that you have kind of agency and power to be able to give. And that can be a very affirming and joy-filling experience to be able to give, but then also to elicit a response. And I think that's a big part of why people enjoy giving so much, is if they do get it right, that ability to kind of be like, I did that. I was able to bring joy to another person. I was able to create that response. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of what is so validating and joy-inducing for these toddlers.
And Lisa, you know, with the group of the same researchers or an overlap did one with adults, which also came back very similar. So it's not that we lose that, right? We still like having a response and a positive impact on someone's life. But this
Absolutely.
Study, yeah, this study, Kathleen, was done of adults who got bonuses at work, profit sharing bonuses, mm-hmm. and of various sizes. And what was measured was their happiness or their change in happiness before and after. And the researchers found that a better predictor of their happiness after the receiving of this profit-sharing bonus was not the size of the bonus. It was a better predictor how they spent it, whether they gave, how much of it they gave away to either gifts or charity.
Oh, yeah. I feel better about us. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Let's welcome phone calls. We have some coming in. We're talking about, as you prepare gift giving, if you haven't made your gifts or purchased your gifts now, this is some really interesting advice. And a lot of it's based on science, which can boost appreciation for everything you present as a gift this year. We have two guests with us, Lisa Cavanaugh, Assistant Professor of Marketing at the USC Marshall School of Business and expert in consumer psychology, and she studies how emotions and social relationships influence consumption. Also joining us is Donna Wexler Linden, a journalist and author. Her work often appears in the Wall Street Journal, as did the article that got us thinking about this whole topic, Five Ways to Give Better Gifts, backed by science. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. We'd love to hear from you about your gift giving and how you go about it and how, well, I think in your lifetime, the best gift that you ever gave that you felt was the most appreciated gift that you give. And do you give with part of yourself in mind, or do you analyze the other person? Do you find it unusual that giving a part of ourself might be a better gift? I would have thought it's the other way around. All right, we'll be with you in just one moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're welcoming phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. We do have to, and we will, I promise you, after a few messages from our audience, talk about how much recipients will appreciate a charitable donation in their name. So is that a good gift? We'll talk about that as we proceed. Jennifer writes to us on Facebook, Lisa and Donna. My sister and I gave each of our young nieces an 8-month book subscription. They received a new book and a fancy lollipop each month for 6 months. We got to select the books and had fun selecting for our nieces books that had been our favorites as children. Terrific fun.
That sounds like a fabulous idea.
Doesn't it?
It does. It sounds like that is giving of yourself, but also keeping in mind the preferences of your recipient.
Yeah, exactly. Do you like it, Lisa?
And it came with candy. It seems hard to beat.
A woman after my own heart. Who doesn't like a little bit of candy? That is a nice idea. So that would be a hit, given the research, the scientific research that you've uncovered.
Yes, I think so. It certainly sounds that way.
And also the fact that it has a tangible, there's obviously a literal sweetness with the lollipops, but there's also something tangible, those books that come at a monthly basis,
mm-hmm.
that are these tangible reminders not only of the gift that was given, but of the person, right, and that relationship, and that hopefully what's that commitment between that aunt and that niece of, oh, this is something they read, and it kind of connects them across generations and gives them something to talk about and enrich that relationship further. So I think it sounds like a wonderful gift idea.
It sure does.
Yeah, you can imagine them when they get together saying, oh, did you love it? It used to be my favorite.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Eric in Endeavor. Hi, Eric.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Yeah, I've been told I'm the best gift giver of all time by my mother and different people. And first of all, I'd never, ever go with a list to the mall and a list of names trying to figure out what to match up some product with some person. It just doesn't happen like that.
Yeah.
And secondly, if I had any anxiety about giving a gift, I just don't give a gift. My mom wanted a pew bench, like an old church pew bench.
Uh-huh.
For like 20 years, I heard my sister say. So I was remodeling a church, and I ended up with, I asked them for one of the pews, and I had an Amish kid cut it down and refinish it. And I dressed up like a hippie and went to a restaurant. The restaurant told my mother that there's only one place to sit. Now it's with another couple. And she didn't recognize me. And she was quite frightened until she sat down and I took off my costume. And then the best gift was the pew bench that she wanted for a long time.
Oh, that's a nice present. And why does your mom think you're the best gift giver ever, Eric?
Well, because I do stuff like that. I just pay attention to what people need or want. I don't necessarily give Christmas gifts. But I just give it when it needs to be given.
Yeah. Thank you for your call. What do you do? People reach a certain age in life where you do have so many things that you just don't need very much anymore. How do you, Lisa, give a gift that will bring those crow's feet to the eyes when somebody's got everything?
That's what proves to be a really challenging point in time, because you're right, there's definitely a point in time where your friends or family members, your work colleagues, they have the means to purchase the types of things that they might want, and they probably, if they want something, they probably already purchased it for themselves. So the idea of going and getting additional tangible gifts can be rather off-putting. So that's where I think this idea of thinking about experiences, and that's actually one of the things that I really liked about one of your listeners, the 8-month book subscription piece.
Mm-hmm.
And Lollipop is, it actually has, it's kind of a gift that keeps on giving in a couple different ways. So another one for adults, maybe not for children, but thinking about experiences, and this echoes something that Donna had said earlier, thinking about experiences that you could share, so experiential gifts that you could give to someone or that you could share with that person. Obviously, you don't want to impose upon them and expect that they share that experience with you, but if it is something that you both love, you both love biking, or you both love skiing, or you both love great food, choosing a gift certificate to one of those places where they could then go to that place and share that with you, or finding the newest, latest restaurant that had been written up that, was a special find. Those type of things that show attention. And in many ways, what Eric was saying was he was a good listener, and that's what made
right.
his gift well received. It's the same thing of what did you hear that's not just something that you saw in a magazine or on a newspaper article about these are the top gifts for 2015, but instead this is something that really reflects an aspect of life, a hobby, something that makes your gift recipient's heart sing.
Yes. Thanks, Eric, very much for the call. And let us go to Maggie in Waukesha. Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to share a gift that I had given a number of years ago to my elderly mother who was living alone. And, it's hard to cook for one. And so what I would do is when I would make my own meals at home, I would freeze up small, like little individual portions, make little mini meatloafs and little mini, breads and things like that. And then freeze them, and then once a week I would take them over and give them to her.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, and she said it was the best gift that she ever got. Not only did she have these simple, these easy meals, but we got to see each other regularly.
Mm-hmm.
That is so lovely. And, I'm not sure you meant to do this, but it also fits with this study that you were giving of yourself. You were giving the food that you like to cook for yourself and that you were eating yourself and sharing it with her.
Mm-hmm. What a wonderful thing to do that is. That's, and she looked forward, I'm sure, to the visits. And when you're by yourself, cooking by yourself is just kind of the last thing you want to do, right? It's just not fun for the most part. Sometimes it can be, but that is a wonderful gift. Thank you very much for your call, Maggie. All right, this is going to lead us right into this what about the making a donation in your name, Lisa. Gail sends this in email. My brother gave the worst gifts because they were all about him. Everyone got a donation in our name to his favorite charity, not to our favorite charity, mainly because he would have to speak with us to find out what would be important to me. Oh, my. I hope they've mended their fences. Oh, brother. Lisa, what about those making a donation?
Yeah, so it's an interesting topic because it's something where we've seen a lot of growth in gift givers wanting and desiring these types of gifts, to be able to give these types of gifts to gift recipients, and particularly around the holidays where they worry that so many people are giving tangible gifts that they don't really want or, you know, they're getting tangible gifts they don't really want or need. And so it seems like a great idea is to give a donation in someone's name, because in that case, you are instead, you know, hopefully creating satisfaction and happiness from helping someone in need, i.e. a charity. And that seems great. And a lot of research has been showing that gift givers love to give these types of gifts, but what hadn't been really looked at is whether or not recipients actually appreciate receiving them. That was a very great introduction from your listener in terms of that they can really oftentimes be not received in the way that they were probably in the spirit they were intended by the gift giver.
Right.
So what we have found is that oftentimes, you know, givers desire and enjoy giving the gifts, but recipients don't necessarily enjoy receiving them, in large part because givers mispredict when choosing how much that a gift will be appreciated. They oftentimes will be looking at the world through their own eyes, mm-hmm. and thinking about, oh, by giving this gift, I can help others in need, and I can feel good about myself being altruistic and
right.
And maybe I'll even communicate that about myself. Right? And this is one of the things that's interesting about, how maybe some of that purity of giving gifts as children changes to when we become adults. We have other kind of mixed and competing motives like image maintenance. And self-presentational concern, and that sometimes guides our gift choices more so than thinking about what would make that recipient blissfully happy.
Mm-hmm. And you also have research that shows, Donna, this is in your article, that only parents and close friends really would like a charitable donation made in their name. Most would prefer a mundane, even tangible gift like a travel mug.
Yes, or as Lisa said when I was interviewing her for this, they would have preferred a proverbial fruitcake.
No, thank you. Not me.
But Lisa can elaborate on this more, but this was a matter of her then digging into the various groups that she had included in her studies to see, okay, which did and which didn't appreciate a charitable donation in their name.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, right. Carry on.
Yeah, so it depends a lot. The key factor is relational closeness, and that's the critical factor as to the extent to which people appreciate a socially responsible gift or not. And these are, of course, on average. You may, you know, there certainly are going to be people who may not fall into kind of the groups or the exact pattern of what we found, but we've done a series of studies across the country with, you know, young people, general population samples, so, you know, 18 to 82 and you know, men and women, and, you know, looking at all these different factors, what really came out in the wash was that relational closeness is the critical predictor, that gift givers are more likely to choose donation in someone's name or a socially responsible gift when it is a distant other, someone they're not as close to, likely because they may not know their preferences as well. They may not have the benefit of repeated gift exchanges to know or learn about what they like and don't like. And they may be more motivated to say, hey, I want them to see me in a positive light, and I want to try to build this relationship or build a closeness. And maybe I can do that by giving one of these do-gooder gifts that should say, you know, something positive about myself and help the world at the same time.
Right.
And unfortunately, those are the very people who appreciate those gifts the least. And consistently, they would have appreciated receiving tangible, ordinary, mundane gifts. Not something that even reflects the giver or reflects the recipient, but something that would be very gender neutral and generic, thinking about almost, you know, whether it's a travel mug or an executive pen or something that, you know, you really anyone could pick up an office supply store, if you will.
Right.
And that those types of gifts were even appreciated more than the donations that were made in their name.
Well, that's fascinating.
In large part because those recipients perceive those gifts as symbolizing more about that giver than the recipient or the giver's commitment to their relationship.
Right. Yeah. And I could see you could maybe making a statement, oh, look how good I am. I'm giving you a gift certificate because I'm out to making the world a better place, which is fine. You know, it's fine to do that.
And it's almost as if that emotional benefit that accrues when someone makes that type of choice, you know, whether it's choosing a dishwashing detergent that is gentler on the environment, or
right.
it's choosing clothing that's made with organic cotton, or it's choosing, you know, some type of gift that benefits the world.
Yes.
But the emotional benefits often accrue to the person who made that choice,
yes, I understand,
rather than the person receiving it.
Right. Got it. Yeah. All right. Let's go next to Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
My
father-in-law is one of those people that is so hard to buy for because he's an older gentleman and kind of has everything that he wants. And several years ago, he built all of the grandkids' wooden toys and told us that he'd like some pictures to show friends of, you know, the kids with their toys. So what we did is we took pictures with the kids in their trucks and rocking chairs and all of that kind of good stuff and put them into something like a scrapbook. But we had the kids write letters that basically said, you know, what Grandpa means to me or what have you.
Aww.
And I don't know how many times Grandpa's told me now that that was the best gift he's ever received in his life. And every time, you know, the kids give him something more, he slides it right into that scrapbook. And I have to say that one time I was, you know, we live in small town Wisconsin here, and I was in the neighboring town at the gas station, and the attendant there mentioned the scrapbook that Grandpa had gotten because he had been taking it around and showing people. So it wasn't expensive. It was very simple, and anybody can do it, but it was the most meaningful thing. And to hear that back from Grandpa really is just incredible, like a gift that gives back to us.
Yeah, it sure does. Oh, what a touching story. And for him to be showing it to other people in the neighboring town, I like that, Donna.
It reminds me of what you just said, Lisa, that's really showing that you're thinking about the other person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really showing that you value the relationship a lot.
Right.
And you value the commitment of the relationship. That's lovely.
Yeah, that is lovely.
And really reflected, you know, as your caller had said, he said that he would love to see some pictures. So then not only providing pictures, but going above and beyond. And that says, wow, I heard you. I understand you. You get me. And then you exceeded my expectations. And I think that's what gives that show and tell quality. And just what a beautiful gift.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laura. Very nice. Bree in La Crosse. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Bree.
So when I heard the show come on, I was wrapping and sending out gift orders for my small business.
Oh.
So I wanted to call in and just give a little perspective from that side.
Sure, go ahead.
We make Wisconsin's only bourbon barrel aged maple syrup, and I've always loved giving gifts that really reflect the relationship that you have with a person. And I found that food is a really good gift, especially for someone who has so much, you know, different things, and it's hard to find something for them. Because you've got something you can put under the tree. It's not just like a certificate, but it's really the experience and sharing that experience and something that really engages all of the senses and makes a memory. That's what I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like food, too. What do you think, Lisa?
I think food can be a great gift, especially when you think someone already has everything.
For
many of the reasons why Laura just had mentioned, it is sensory rich, which is wonderful, but it also isn't something that's going to create clutter. You know, there's oftentimes, I'm sure many of us have gifts that we've received that we feel like we have to hold on to, but even if they didn't, it might be clothing, it might be a knickknack that we hold on to because when that person comes over to our house, you know, and we want to make sure that we able, and they're like, oh, where's that X that I gave you, or show me a picture of the kids in the sweater that I sent. And those things, you know, they can almost become a burden if there's something that's tangible that we have to hold on to kind of maintain a relationship or so as to not offend someone. But food is wonderful because you eat it, you enjoy it, and then it doesn't take up more space in your home. So I think that's a great and often can be a really great idea, particularly if you're sensitive to someone's, you know, food preferences. If someone is vegetarian, you don't want to be sending them Omaha steaks. But as long as you're reflecting something about, let's say, your home state or a place you know they've visited, it can be wonderfully thoughtful and rich because it reminds them that you heard them, you understand them, and that you're taking their needs into consideration, as well as oftentimes doing something that will not create any undue strain after that gift exchange has taken place.
Do you give food, Donna?
I do give food, but I try usually to make it something that is, it would fit with, in this case, something that reflects where I live, what I love to eat, or what I love to cook, rather than, I don't tend to give sort of a fruit of the month type thing.
Right.
I always am looking for a slight personal angle to it.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, do you give food?
I do sometimes. I give food if I can tell a good story about that food. And that has to do with either a connection to a place, you know, whether it's, you know, a place that you went to school for university or graduate school, or you grew up, or a place that you're visiting, and you can tell them about something about why you chose that gift. I try never to send something without an explanation as to what I was thinking when I chose it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of puts me through this way of hopefully expressing the personal nature of it. But I didn't just say, hey, I'm going to pick up, you know, boxes of cookies for everyone, and all 25 people on my list are going to get a box of cookies, but actually choosing something very specific to them. If I know they love to cook and I'm somewhere special that has really neat spices that were blended locally or that, you know, that are, it's from a farm-to-table place, and they love to, you know, to barbecue, and I can get special cooking salt.
Oh, that's nice,
you know,
yeah.
Something like that. So it's something that maybe they wouldn't get for themselves that's unique. It doesn't have to be expensive. It needs to just be, I think, oftentimes thoughtful, and not thoughtful meaning that you put thought into it and it may have been your own needs that were being expressed, but thoughtful in terms of that perspective taking. What is it that they enjoy? What is it that they do? What sensory experiences would bring them the most joy? Mm.
And what about expensive, Donna? Are we still into this kind of American trap where the more luxurious the gift, the more you spend, the greater enjoyment the recipient is going to have from it, or not?
I think that there are research studies that show that the price of the gift really doesn't translate into the enjoyment. One study that I included in the story is sort of related to that. It's that a lot of people think that if you're giving something, say you choose a large, generous gift, a cashmere sweater for someone, it's very common for people to want to add in a little extra, like a cute little pen or a little Starbucks card, because it feels even more generous to them and fun. And this study found out that actually your small extras, the little stocking stuffer type add-ons, are actually detracting from appreciation of the gift overall, even though you're spending more money by doing it. And what turns out to be the reason, according to these researchers, is that recipients subconsciously will average the values of the individual components of the gift when they're forming an impression of it. And so the cashmere sweater, which cost a certain amount of money, gets averaged in with the little ballpoint pen, and the overall, they come away with an impression that it was worth less.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting. Do people actually, I've always wondered why there are so many of these car commercials, brand new cars with red bows on TV at this time of year. Do people actually do that? They must, or they wouldn't be running ads. Do you ever wonder about that? Lisa,
I think a lot of that is gears into more of kind of us gifts, where either a couple or a family will choose, okay, this is the thing that we're going to do. I don't think it's so much a giver choosing that as, you know, a choice for another person, as much as it is kind of creating the impression that that's a normal thing to do, and hopefully getting more people out on the lots for those end-of-year sales before the new models come out. I think that's really what that's trying to promote. And really to circle back actually to one of the things that
that Donna had said earlier, this idea about the price, because obviously a car is a very high ticket item, a high price gift, if that was something you were going to give to your family per se. It turns out that gift givers are the ones who really think that price is indicative of how much something will be appreciated, but recipients, that doesn't guide their perceptions of appreciation at all. So that's where there's, again, this misperception where givers really think, oh, if I buy this big expensive gift, or I buy this more expensive brand version of this item, that it'll be appreciated more. And it turns out that recipients don't perceive that same value that givers often anticipate.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about giving, as many of you, I'm sure, in the situation that I am, and you just haven't finished your holiday shopping yet, or, you know, shopping beyond just this time of year. We're looking at giving gifts and how you can make the recipient happy, because that's what you want to do, is make somebody happy. Is it a gift that needs to have the recipient in mind, or you in mind, or a combination of both? What about men and women and shopping for them? What about cards, a donation in your name has been given to? Do we appreciate those or not? We have two guests with us. Lisa Cavanaugh is assistant professor of marketing at the USC Marshall School of Business, an expert on consumer psychology. And Donna Wexler Linden wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal which caught our fancy and led to this show, and the article is titled, Five Ways to Give Better Gifts, Backed by Science. What are the better gifts you have given? What have you taken into account as you have made gifts or thought about the recipient? What's been a really big hit? Our phone number, again, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. How to give good gifts is the focus of this hour, and it's the focus of many of our lives right now, with the help of science, scientific studies of what makes a good gift and what you keep in mind. And all of that is what we're talking about, the science of this, because there is a science to it. Who thought there was a science? If you follow the science, it might be a whole lot easier for you to give gifts. We thought a lot of you might be in the same situation we are, and so we thought that we would talk about it this hour. Let's go to Kathy in Fitchburg next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi.
I really am a firm believer in gifts that are experiences rather than tangible things, and and my family is really all kind of about it, my kids and my husband and me. And what we did, my husband's a movie lover, so the kids and I took him to Chicago. We found out places where they filmed, like parts of Risky Business, High Fidelity, different movies, Fort Ferris Bueller, and we took him to some of the spots where they filmed parts of those movies.
Oh, that was
fun. And then
at
the end, we gave him a jar of jelly and a fake Jelly of the Month Club certificate from Christmas Vacation, which was also in the Chicago area.
Oh, that was really fun. Fun for everybody, huh?
We all had a great day. And that was maybe the one time that I felt that I gave something good. He's fabulous at giving gifts to me. But I finally felt like I did one that was a lot of fun for him.
And what's he given that was fabulous for you?
He also is experientially oriented. And for my birthday one year, he took the day off of work on my birthday, and he gave me a gift for each of the five senses. So he took me to a flower shop. He told me to close my eyes and pick whatever flowers smelled the best to me, and a chocolate shop for sense of taste. Yeah, it was fabulous.
Oh, I like that, Donna. What do you think about that one?
You know, it's an interesting, there's an interesting commonality to a lot of these wonderful gifts we're hearing about from
right.
the phone callers, which is a lot of thought went into each of them.
Yes.
They're very personal gifts. They're,
right.
None of them are, you know, just going to a store and picking out something that looks pretty. They really have thought about the person.
Yeah, and we all kind of, it goes way back in our lives, Lisa, we all like little surprises like that, or big surprises, as the case may be. What a terrific idea that was.
Most definitely. I mean, if you think about the relationship building aspect, it's this, the theme that I'm also hearing over and over again is people hearing someone, understanding them, and really showing for that gift that they get you,
yes.
And that they and that they've connected with you on a very intimate level. This you know this idea of taking someone essentially on a kind of an adventure where
right.
part of it is completely unexpected and wonderful, and yet you still have some agency in the matter by you know she was able to choose which flowers smelled best to her. It wasn't like oh darn it he chose the red roses and I would have loved yellow ones or I would have loved you know lavender ones
yes.
In color. It's actually you know giving that person an opportunity to express a little bit of themselves but really guiding them on this fun gift journey.
Yes. Oh, that's just wonderful. Thanks, Kathy. Let's go next to John in La Crosse. Hi, John.
Hi there.
Hi, John.
Hi. Well, I was just going to comment on my experience with my wife of 21 years. I always look forward to a small gift that she's given me every year we've been together, and that's a little plush Christmas toy that makes some kind of goofy Christmas jingle. And although it's a small thing, the entertainment, and I always look forward to it. Is it going to be the jingle bells singing pig or the frog that croaks? Merry Christmas.
Right. I'm with you. That's great. So you get one every year, huh?
I get one every year, and I look forward to that. And as far as, you know, meaningful gifts for us, the best way I found is if I notice something during the year that she wants that caught her attention, but then it's completely forgotten by the time Christmas rolls around.
Yes.
And the best way to give a good gift is to show that, hey, I was paying attention to you earlier in the year when this is something that you kind of wanted.
Yes, very good idea. Don't you think, Lisa?
Absolutely. I think there's two things that John said that are worth repeating. The first is that traditions can be a wonderful source of meaning and a great way to further bond with a relationship partner, whether that's a spouse or a friend or a family member. But the other piece is this idea of I heard you, I was listening.
Mm-hmm.
So that things that she said to John earlier in the year, something that he was listening, not only when it came time where, okay, we're now within that X number of weeks before the holidays or your birthday, and all of a sudden now I need to be thinking about a gift, but I was actually listening to you all year round, and that in and of itself, being heard, is a wonderful gift.
It sure is. Thank you, John, so much. Cal in Brookfield. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Cal.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's two things we do that are related to food, and it amounts to my wife's grandfather used to run a bakery, and my wife carries on the tradition of making the stollen from her grandfather's recipe and giving it to all her brothers and sisters.
Oh, nice.
And then the other thing we do is for her parents, we give them a dinner once a month all year long, and we make sure there's leftovers so they have a second meal from that as well.
That's nice, isn't it, Donna?
Very nice, very nice. You know, the first one, it's like the previous caller's music toys. These traditions are, they create a lot of warm feeling. They almost symbolize the lasting relationship
mm-hmm.
that we have, whether it's with our romantic partner or, in this case, with the family members. They almost, the fact that you're getting it becomes a symbol another year that we're together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very powerful.
You know, it does. It's like bringing out the ornaments for the tree and going through all of the years and those your parents may have given you and the ones you've collected. And it's always a very important time,
yeah.
Passage of time, passage of people, passage.
And you're still
connection.
Together with
right.
the connection to the past and
yeah.
hopefully looking forward to the future.
Right, right. Okay, thank you very much, Cal. Judith in Muskego. Hi.
Hello. This is an idea from my daughter's step-grandmother, and it's recycled packaging. And what Priscilla does is after Christmas, she goes to fabric stores and buys the Christmas material, you know, at 70% off, and she makes bags out of this.
Oh.
So when she gifts when she gives gifts to the people in her family, they go into these recycled bags. So not only do you get the present, but you get a bag that you can use next year. After, you know, like 4 or 5 years, you don't have to wrap anymore because you have all these wonderful, colorful bags.
Isn't that a good idea?
Oh.
Donna, Lisa.
Certainly very unique.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and again, it shows so much thought being put into it and effort. You realize a lot of time just for you, which is lovely.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you both so much for being with us. It was a fun hour and informative, I might add. Thanks to both of you. Thank you.
Good luck with your gift giving.
Yeah, thanks very much. I got to get on it. Our guest this hour, Donna Wexler Linden, a journalist who writes for a lot of places, but often for the Wall Street Journal, where her piece, 5 Ways to Give Better Gifts Backed by Science, caught our attention. Lisa Cavanaugh, assistant professor of marketing at the USC Marshall School of Business and expert in consumer psychology. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the show and for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee, where, by golly, the sun is shining.